A woman who fears the Lord will be praised. It's not about her charms. It's not about her beauty. It's about her soul. And as a woman who's getting older every year and who in a society that says she's worth less every year she ages, I go back to that and say, Lord, I want to have a beautiful soul.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Shelby Abbott, and your hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com.
This is Family Life Today.
So I've got two women in studio today, and probably you guys know this verse, 1 Peter 3:7. Anybody know what it says? Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. And every guy's like, please help me. How do I understand her? You know, why do you think Peter writes that to husbands if women have to be understood? Are you guys that complicated? are you misunderstood that often?
We have Mary DeMuth back in the studio with us today. She's a favorite guest of ours. But Mary, I'm going to forward that question on to you. How's that?
Well, you wrote a book about the 10 most misunderstood. So yeah, answer that a little bit, because I do think as men, we do misunderstand.
Yeah, I think we are misunderstood. And I think, again, that it has to do with communication, that we're just not communicating well. And maybe it's that we're not communicating what we actually are feeling, or that there's something lost in translation as well, which, you know, you guys talk about communication all the time, I'm sure. So there's, you know, the speaker and the speaker, and there's always like this in the middle.
Yeah.
So it is hard. And I think that's what we want in marriage. At least I want to be understood. Mm-hmm. And I want that in my friendships as well. I just want to feel known. And that's why I wrote this book, because I feel like we can learn from these women in the Bible who have been misunderstood, and we can learn principles from the Word of God of, well, what do you do when it happens? It is going to happen. It is inevitable. And so how do you go forward from there?
When you say you want to be known, I think every woman would resonate with that. What do you think that means? Explain that to men.
Well, I was just thinking, I think a lot of us men say, I don't want to be known.
Yes.
Seriously, when you said that, I'm like, I want to be known, but not really. It's like, I sort of want to keep my shell
keep
up
image.
A little bit.
But I want to know you.
Yeah, I know, and that's scary.
So I'll say this, that this kind of elevates this conversation, is that when we look at the Trinity, God is...
See, she goes to the Trinity.
Here we
I
go.
Like this.
God is relationship. He is Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and they existed outside of time in perfect relationship and in perfect intimacy. And intimacy is to know another, and even on the human scale is to know the hard parts too. And then he created human beings out of that intimacy because he wanted to have intimacy with his creation, but he also wanted Adam and Eve to have that intimacy as well. And that is to be known, is to have all those parts. Mm-hmm. And you cannot have, it's false intimacy if two people managing their reputations are getting to know each other, but they never let each other behind the mask.
And yeah.
It's the gospel story that we are fully known and fully loved.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of marriage, when we can do that, to
and
be fully known
and
loved.
And the truth is, every man wants that. It feels more complicated to navigate that because you do have to let the guard down.
Yeah. I think men want to be known too.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Because when they are, it is intoxicating.
Yes.
When you are really loved for who you are with your problems and your foibles, then you know that you're truly loved. And that's how God loves us,
yes.
Right?
Yes. We've talked yesterday in our previous episode. We hit Bathsheba, we hit Eve, and we hit... Is that,
that was it?
So today, let's talk about Naomi.
Yes.
From the story of Ruth.
Yes, yes. So beautiful thing about the book of Ruth, a little teaching, is that it is in a chiastic structure. So it starts and ends at kind of the same place. And then when Hebrew people tell stories, they tell it in chiasm, which is kind of like an inverted V. The center of the story is in the middle of the story, whereas we as Westerners, we tell the climax kind of toward the end. Mm. So the middle part of that story is Ruth at the feet or on the side of Boaz, and that's kind of like, aha, this is, everything's going to change, and it pivots on that. But what I love about Naomi's story is she's so authentic. Talk about being known. She goes back to her hometown, Bethlehem, the house of bread, which she had left because there was a famine. She comes back bereft, no husband, no sons. And she's got this rando lady named Ruth who says, whither thou goest. And she even lies in that moment. The ladies of Bethlehem said, you're back. It's Naomi. And she goes, no, call me Mara, which is the root of my own name, Mary. I've always like, why does my name mean bitter? But she says, call me bitter. I don't have anything. And yet she has, her redemption is standing right next to her. So in grief, if you're out there grieving, understand that grief puts a pallor over everything and it blinds you to the good things in your life. And I believe the Lord wants to bring us through a lament to work on our grief so that we can begin to have our eyes opened to what is going on around us and the blessings that God has for us, even in the midst of that grief.
Oh, that is such a good word. Have you ever had to do that? Where you've been so bombarded with the heaviness of grief that you couldn't see anything around you?
Definitely. A lot of different times, I think back on church planting in France and everything fell apart and I could not see any good. And the Lord brought me through.
Did you ask your husband to call you Mara?
I'm not Marie, I'm Mara. Yes, I felt that way. And I worked through, there's some psalms called Lament Psalms in the book of Psalms. And there's kind of a way to go through where you name it. Why, God? Why? How long, oh Lord, is this going to happen? And then you kind of progress all the way through. And at the end, you say, but I'm going to choose to trust you, but you are sovereign. And so you move through by naming the grief, by yelling at God about it, and then by coming through on the other side of with hope. And so walking through that journey, someone out there needs to hear this today. You have to mourn. It does not work to shove it down. You will miss the blessings of God if you do not walk the valley of grief.
And so often we think you can't yell at God, you can't complain to God, and yet it's all through the Psalms, like you said, and yet we're afraid to go there, not even understanding what you just said. It's actually a healing journey.
Right.
If you'll verbalize it, right? And do you write it?
Yeah, so I write out my lament Psalms, and it helps me. There's just something about the physicality of that that helps me see it in black and white. Oh yeah, I am really mad. And I am wondering why God is not giving me deliverance in this area.
When my sister died, I had that same situation. It felt so bleak. It's like the world, you can't even see color when you're in the midst of it. And I'm imagining that was what Naomi was feeling. She's lost everything. So as we know the story of Ruth, we know her redemption came. We know the story of Boaz coming.
Some don't know the story.
That's what I was going to say. We know it. But in the midst of that, do we blame Naomi for her bitterness?
Right. And there's no passage in that that says, and God was mad at her for being calling herself Mara. But at the end, you see her holding this baby. Her family line has been restored. And then this, of course, is in not only the line of David, but the line of Jesus. And so this, and from a Moabitess. So someone outside of the Commonwealth of Israel is part of the lineage of Christ, which then hints at God is for us all. The nation of Israel was supposed to be that city on a hill that drew everyone to themselves. And here is a story in the book of Ruth of God doing just that, pulling a Moabitess into the Commonwealth because he was for everybody.
I'm realizing that I've totally misunderstood Naomi. I've always seen her as a whiner. Like, are you kidding? Stop whining. Ruth left everything. She lost her husband too, and she followed you. Come on, get your eyes on and see the blessings that God has put around you. But you're saying no. Like, that's normal. She was still mourning the loss of everything that she had experienced.
What about the woman or the man who doesn't get the Ruth
ending?
Yeah. You know, there isn't hope standing beside her or him.
The Savior doesn't, world doesn't come through
her. And they hear this and they go, okay, I get it. She lamented, but she ended up with a great story. My story's not turning. My story's still dark. I don't think it's ever gonna turn.
And that's where we have to rest in the sovereignty of God and know that his stories often take longer than what we want the stories to be.
Yes.
So I have one of my stories of a 40-year prayer. And during that prayer, I was like, there were times I gave up on the prayer. Like, okay, obviously you're not going to answer this. So I made my peace with it. Like, this was someone to come to Christ. That's what my prayer was. And I was like, okay, they're going to have an eternity in hell and I've just got to live with it. And then lo and behold, the Lord answered that prayer. But it took him 40 long years. That's a long time.
That is a long time.
So I think a lot of us as Americans are short-sighted. We think, okay, God, here's my prayer request. And tomorrow it would be great if you answered that prayer. And we are not long-suffering and waiting on that answer. So part of it is it may be coming. We just have to be patient. And part of it is we weren't made for this world. We were made for a person and a place, as Randy Alcorn says. A person is Jesus. That place is new heavens, new earth. And those stories are going to make sense someday. And you are going to live in the tension oftentimes of an unfinished story. But it will be fully complete when all those tears are wiped away on the other side.
That's really good.
So do we go to the New Testament?
Or do you want to do P31?
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, Proverbs 31.
Let's do that.
The perfect woman. Is that a misunderstanding?
When you started reading Proverbs 31 as a younger woman, what did you think of it?
I was mad and frustrated. I'm like, whatever.
Me too. I wouldn't even read it.
Yeah.
Because I was a young mom and I'm like, whatever. Who can do that? Nobody can do that. I don't think that's even a real possibility. Now, what do you think of it?
So now that I've studied it, the audience for P31 is men, not women. And that is revolutionary if you think about it. It is a mom telling her son the qualities of a virtuous woman. And the P31, when you get to all the things that she does, it's a Hebrew acrostic. It was meant to be memorized by men as they were searching and looking for a wife.
I have never heard this.
Yes.
This is fascinating.
Isn't that so cool?
Yes.
So that takes a lot of pressure off. But then some scholars believe that she's wisdom personified. So how she lives is the working out of the whole book of Proverbs. What does industriousness look like? What does having fidelity, what does that look like? So if you look at it that way, it's also helpful. But then also, the mom is telling the son, these are the qualities of a woman worthy of you, you know, because all moms think their sons are awesome and no girl is worthy. But this is her over a lifetime. This is not day in the life of P31. It's she, over her lifetime, has learned to run this business. She, over a lifetime, has served her servant girls. So this is over a lifetime. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off of people who've probably misunderstood her. I think she's just a composite human being of somebody.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's read it.
First part is King Lemuel, which he's only mentioned. That's the only time in the Bible he's mentioned. Some say that he could be Solomon, like a new word for him, that this was Bathsheba telling Solomon the story. Mm. If you start at the beginning, it's King Lemuel. She's telling him, a virtuous woman who can find. Mm.
Which is interesting, too, because as they do the Shabbat dinner, we've had many dinners and celebrations of the Sabbath or the Shabbat over in Israel. And this is part of the Shabbat.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty cool that it's almost a blessing over the woman, over the wife, which is beautiful as they read it.
And often memorized by men.
Yes.
Because it's an acrostic.
And they read it out loud to the woman and then bless her, the wife.
Yeah, what do you want me to read?
Yeah. Just let's hear. I want to hear it.
I mean, verse 11, this is what every husband wants.
He's picking and choosing. No cherry picking verses.
The heart of her husband trusts in her, he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. Every guy's like, that's the woman I want.
I think I think that can be true.
Oh, yeah, definitely true. I feel that way about you, no question.
Oh, you're nice.
There were days, maybe years.
But today,
maybe decades.
Decades, maybe.
No, I mean, we've talked
millennia.
About this many times when you would speak truth to me, which you did in love, but I didn't feel it was loving.
I hadn't learned how to speak truth yet.
And I felt like you were harming me. Mm. When now I realize I'm a better man because of it. Mm. But in those days, it felt like, can she just be this woman? She never harms her husband. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchants. She brings her food from afar.
And that's not just Walmart.
She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. Hmm. I mean, when you hear that, do you feel like that's just a burden you have to carry as a woman and a mom and a wife? Or is that exciting?
I think it's overwhelming, but as I read it as a woman over her lifetime, it's compelling to me. Like, this is the epitome of virtue. And so as I work my way toward my sanctification journey, these things are going to be true of me. I love how it ends. Charm is deceitful, but beauty is vain. But yeah. A woman who fears the Lord will be praised. And our beauty-obsessed culture, this flies in the face of that. A woman who fears the Lord will be praised. It's not about her charms. It's not about her beauty. It's about her soul. Mm. And as a woman who's getting older every year and who in a society that says she's worth less every year she ages, I go back to that and say, Lord, I want to have a beautiful soul.
Yeah.
I want people to see this soul that is enlarging as I'm, you know, declining in years, but that my soul is growing closer to Jesus.
I'm thinking about my mom at her funeral. She was 90 years old. She had 12 grandsons. No granddaughters.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And Dave actually did the funeral, and he had each of the 12 grandsons get up and share something about my mom.
I said it's mandatory.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful.
It was, wow. Absolutely. It reminds me of the Proverbs 31 woman. Mm-hmm. You're right. She had gotten old. She didn't have the looks, but there is a beauty to her that was indescribable. She served us. She loved us. She laughed at life even when it was hard. And each of those grandsons and us, her kids, got up to share about her. And it's a long, 90 years old, that's a long life. It wasn't perfect, but boy, we can point back to that and say, I want to be like her. The beauty that she portrayed was amazing.
I mean, it's such a contrast to the, like you said, Mary, the
culture.
The culture we live in is plastic surgery now. Mm-hmm. There's a lady in her almost 80s singing national anthem at a game, and she's trying to look 50 or 40.
Well, it's because we live in a culture that
only values that.
Right. Youth. Especially in a vocation that the world is always looking at you and
judging.
Yeah,
I'm just saying this reminds us
right.
of what really matters. It's not the physical, it's the spiritual. How about verse 16? She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard.
Now, this chick was a businesswoman, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I love. I mean, that's where I think we forget about the beauty of this, is that this actually has a very robust view of women. Mm-hmm. Industriousness and leadership and service. And she's wearing a lot of hats. And I mean, I wear a lot of hats, so I just relate to that. I think it's beautiful. But again, we don't need to, you know, get mad at her. She's a composite of all the best parts of what it means to be a woman.
Yeah, and it's beautiful to think this is over a lifetime.
Yeah.
That's a really good insight. Let me read one last one, verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Mm. How's that a part of a woman's role?
Well, I think it's funny that he's like hanging out and sitting and she's like, da-da-da-da-da. So that part kind of makes me laugh. But she's honoring her husband. And I think that's important, you know, giving him honor and dignifying his role that he's playing in the society and the community that he's in.
It reminds me of it's a super old joke about the woman that's married to the mayor, and the mayor sees a construction worker, and he says, you know, you almost married that guy, that construction worker. And what does she say?
No, he says you'd be married to a construction worker today, and she says, yeah, if I'd marry him, he'd be the mayor. So, I mean, it's an old joke.
Maybe the Proverbs man is sitting there because the woman really had an effect on his life and helped him to become the man that he was.
Do we have time for Phoebe?
Quickly, I think so.
Let's do it.
So we don't know much about her, but she's in Romans 16 and Paul commends her. And he says, I commend to you my sister Phoebe. And the thing about her is that most scholars believe that she was the one who carried the book of Romans to Rome. Mm. Because when Paul commends somebody, he is usually saying they're the person carrying the letter. He's basically saying, I commend her. She is the one that is going to deliver this. But not only did a deliverer of the letter hand, like, take out the, they were not just the postal service. She would most likely have memorized it. And she would have, she was coming from like Centria and Corinth around Italy. So it was like a perilous journey. So not only that, but she would have had to know Paul's inflections, and she would have elocuted the book of Romans to the Romans that she met, Aquila and Priscilla, and all the church that was meeting with their tent making enterprise and business. And so she's not known well, but most likely we wouldn't have the book of Romans had Phoebe not done that. And then she also was able to emphasize what Paul wanted to emphasize in that letter and have his heart.
Just a lighthearted little letter, you know?
Not a big deal.
You think about...
this is a theological treatise whole Bible. Like, it's so beautiful. And here we have this woman. I heard about a seminary that they would teach the whole book of Romans and they would stop and wouldn't teach chapter 16. Which just made me mad because there's all sorts of women in chapter 16, and they didn't want to have to deal with that. So they just didn't teach it. Like, this is part of Romans. And she is commended because she is grabbing it and bringing it most likely to the... We don't know for sure, 100%. We'll find out on the other side.
But, how was she misunderstood?
Well, misunderstood by us primarily because she's just like this little blip. And most people don't understand that, especially when we look at the New Testament with Jesus and how he dignified women and how women were a part of his entourage and how they paid for his ministry. Like, he had ministry because they were supporting, and we just kind of gloss over women. And here we have one who is so gutsy and bold and probably single and wealthy, which we don't talk about that much in the church. Well, single women, they are often maligned and unseen and misunderstood. So here we have one who was definitely a Greek person who probably has a pagan background who meets Jesus and does this amazing thing. And so that's why I think we need to know about her.
I think that's fascinating. Even how perilous this trip was and what it took for her to accomplish it is really staggering. And I don't think most people do know that.
Yeah.
What's the application from Phoebe that we can have today?
I think we limit ourselves as Christ followers to our own experience. I don't think she was like a letter carrier prior to this. And so she could have been like, that's a lot to ask.
I'm a woman.
I don't want to travel the seas and it could be dangerous. And then, you know, walking up the Appian Way, like, she had a lot of traveling to do. I think for us, it's that sometimes the Lord will call us into uncomfortable spaces and he wants us not to shrink back, but to trust him. And then amazing things can happen, like the book of Romans can be delivered to the Roman Christians and then to all of Christendom forever in eternity. So that's pretty cool.
But I'm thinking too, Mary, we as women can limit ourselves, especially during certain segments of our lives. We get older and we think, well, I'm too old to do that now. We can always have an impact on other women and people in our community around us. I just had a baby and feels like I'm so overwhelmed with having these children, but they're still things. Did you start writing when your kids were small?
Yes, I did. But I wasn't writing books then. I was just practicing writing and learning. I was apprenticing.
So it was foundational to your future.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't be here today had I not done
that. And so there's never a time that you're overlooked as a woman, that God always sees us. He's always wanting to use us and our gifts. He's always wanting to talk to us and highlight his word of saying, we can find ourselves in the scriptures. Even if we're misunderstood now, we find that there's women in the Bible that were misunderstood too. And Dave, I think you've been a good host today.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Misunderstood women in the Bible. We need a misunderstood men in the Bible book.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Now, my last thought for the men is see the greatness in your woman, your wife, your daughters, your mom, the women in your church. Because I think there's probably some guys that were like, Paul, Phoebe, you don't send a woman on this trip. You send a guy. This is a tough journey. And yet somebody, whether it was Paul, somebody said, no, this woman can do it. And I think often we do not see the greatness in the woman that God has put around us. And we need to stop and look and speak out what we see and appreciate and give them tasks that we think they can't do. They can probably do it better than we can.
Yeah. And I'll add that we as women, we need to stick together. We need to speak life to each other and encourage mm-hmm. each other because we're so filled with doubts at times. Can I do this? And I hope we as women, instead of competing against one another, we can come together because we're a force together. Mm-hmm.
Just really true. What would our churches and Christian communities look like if men consistently spoke life into our wives and other women, and women banded and bonded together without a spirit of competition? We'd change our neighborhoods. We'd change our towns. We'd change our cities, our communities. It would drastically be impacted by the goodness of the gospel, and lives would be transformed. So let's do it. You ready? Let's do it. I'm Shelby Abbott, and you've been listening to David Ann Wilson with Mary DeMuth on Family Life Today. Mary's written a book called The Most Misunderstood Women of the Bible, What Their Stories Teach Us About Thriving. It's a book to really discover how timeless stories of misunderstood women in the Bible actually offer us today real-world practical life application and inspiration. So you can get your copy right now of Mary's book by going online to familylifetoday.com. You can also find it in the show notes. There's a link there. Or you could give us a call at 800-358-6329. Again, that number is 800, F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And you know, I wanted to pause here for a second and just say thank you to all of our monthly partners who make this ministry possible. We are a donor-supported ministry here at Family Life Today, and the people who give monthly in order to make this ministry happen are the ones who support us, who care for us, and help this ministry to move forward and thrive by getting the gospel into people's homes, one home at a time. We are so grateful for you, and I personally am so grateful for you. And you know, earlier, Mary talked a lot about being misunderstood. That's kind of been the theme of her book and the context of the conversation. And it's really easy to feel that way in life, which is one of the reasons why Family Life hosts our Blended and Blessed one-day marriage live stream event for couples in blended families. This is going to be a live event that's happening from the Dallas-Fort Worth area on Saturday, April 27th. The whole heart behind it is really building unity in a blended family, and because that context can be very complicated. It'd be extremely difficult depending on your situation. So I want to encourage you to join us for the Blended and Blessed live stream event as we explore different ways to help you have peace in your home and between your homes. It's going to be speakers like Ron and Ann Deal, Gil and Brenda Stewart, and Gayla Grace. So you can find out more information about the Blended and Blessed live stream event in the show notes. And if you can't make it to the live event in Dallas, it's going to be streamed everywhere that you can watch it later on. More details in the show notes. Now, tomorrow, speaking of Ron Deal, we're going to have Ron join us with Gayla Grace as they discuss working smarter, specifically in the context of blended families. That's tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. On behalf of David Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.